Hi there. This is Desiree Birch, one half of your hosting team for Black Women Are the Illuminati. Welcome to our first ever episode. I just wanted to come on here real quick to tell you a couple of things. We recorded this episode back in January of 2023 when your co-host Nico Rosario and I were actually in the same city and not 5,437 miles apart where we live in London and Los Angeles. You know, sometimes it takes a little while for good things to come into being. Thank you for waiting, world. So, you are going to hear some dated references in this episode, but what we love about it is that it is a time encapsulated. Two sisters in the same room talking about all that we've been, what we have done, and who we might become on this journey. We hope you enjoy it. Welcome to Black Women Are the Illuminati,
the podcast that begins with an hypothesis that behind every cultural and social movement
over which a lot of white guys have shaken hands and slapped backs
is a visionary Black woman who was saying or doing the prototype years earlier and who has received little to no credit at all.
We hope to shine a light on these trailblazers and help y'all bust asses and improve this messed up world. My name is Desiree Birch, and I am a comedian, an actor, a voiceover artist, a general layabout who has managed to monetize that.
Oh, man. I'm Nico Rosario, and I don't know what I do.
You do like everything. You collect master's degrees and cool stuff wait, you studied what?
I did at one point collect master's degrees.
Yes.
That time is over.
Yes, now it's just collecting student loan.
Yes, now I collect student loan interest. And I would say I'm an academic and an educator and a fun seeker.
Yeah.
And a cultural critic to a very small number of people.
Of dedicated followers. Nico's the coolest lady I know.
And I'm a DJ.
See?
And a writer. And
like a doula. What else? You got all this stuff going on. If there's something happening anywhere in your town, Nico already knew about it a week ago and organized an outing.
That is true.
See?
That is true. So, yes. All of those things are true. Yes.
Okay.
Okay. So yes, that's me. Okay. Desiree, my first memory of you is, I'm trying to think about this. I think we met at Whitechapel Gallery in London. Is that right?
I don't know because I smoke too much weed.
I don't smoke any weed, but
so you would remember better than I do.
We have a friend named Claire. Hi, Claire.
Hi, Claire.
We have a friend and she was like, my friend just moved to London, and I think that you would like her, and you guys should be friends. And I said, okay. And then I think we met at the Whitechapel Gallery, but I don't think we saw any exhibits. I think we just, like, sat on a bench and chatted.
Like so many times of us hanging out with a plan, in quotes, and then just talking for 5 hours in front of the thing that we were going to go to.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's what happened.
Okay, thank you. That sounds about right. I do remember when we first met, like, you know, it was like mid-conversation. Do you know what I mean? It was like picking up where we left off in whichever lifetime we had left off in or whatever. Like, it wasn't just like, oh, hi, whatever. It was just like, so anyway, I was saying blah, 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 blah. And it just continued on from there.
Yeah.
So I think that we should tell the good people who will eventually be listening to us why it is we wanted to do a podcast together at all. And in particular, this one.
I think it's because your ex-boyfriend said you guys should do a podcast together because every time
about that.
I just listened to you guys talk. And then he bought you equipment to make the podcast.
Oh, my God.
Didn't do it.
We didn't do it at that point. Although I did buy that Zoom, by the way.
I bought that. But you are right. He did say that. He did go, you guys should really do. He's predicted quite. He was the one who's like, you should move to London. You do really well here. I could move to New York, but I think you should move to London. He was right about that. He's right about a lot of things. So he was right about the podcast. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. Yep. We were talking about that way back in Streatham, which is like, I've lived in so many different parts of London since then. But then, so that sort of. A lot like seeds kind of take a little while to grow. So that's kind of planted the seed. But mm-hmm. I guess, like, I don't know, why this podcast, do you think?
Well, because initially we had like thought, well, maybe we'll do a podcast about two American black girls from, you know, moving to London. Mm-hmm. And then I don't know why we didn't do that. Maybe that wasn't that interesting.
Maybe we were just like, we can do a little bit more.
Yeah. And then I originally had approached you because I was wanting to do like an incubation during the pandemic.
Yeah.
When I had nothing to do. I was like, oh, let's like do this podcast. It was a version of this podcast called the Black Women's History Project or something like that.
Yeah.
Where we would like talk to Black academics and it's just about their research and stuff, Black women academics about their research.
Yeah.
So that was kind of like the seed that we had started. And then we applied for this like incubation lab that they didn't give us because, you know, they were sleeping.
Yeah, they were anyway. Sleeping real hard. But yeah, and I think because of having done some other podcasts in my work, in particular, when I first did the couple, like I did two episodes with of You're Dead to Me, which is, I'm sorry to promote another podcast, guys, but it's a really good one. It's another history podcast. And I'd done one episode about Harriet Tubman and another one about Josephine Baker with this academic, Michelle Cressfield, who's amazing and also American, who works at, I think, University of Birmingham there. But I just was, you know, like you kind of, like you're an academic, I kept coming across and I was like, oh yeah, Black women go and like study all of these things and keep the records and bring the stories forward. And there's like a long history of that. And why not like spotlight that they're doing that and also the subjects that they're talking about at the same time. And there's kind of this like, I don't know, it's just something about like the generational feeding of that, like the ancestry of that. There's something about that that's really kind of like witchy and cool to me in a way that I wanted to see play out.
And I think also Black women look for subjects and they look for things that are just not available and they have to do it because there is no one else to do it.
Yeah.
So I think that was like why I was initially anyway focused on like the academic realm because I was like, how many stories would we just have never, ever gotten if someone hadn't said, I want to know more, or why is there an absence or a, you know? Well, so that was what I thought was kind of interesting.
Did you feel that way? I mean, you studied, amongst other things, rave culture. Like, did you feel when you were going down that road that, like, did you get to a place where you went, oh, wait, if I don't look into this, no one else is going to come looking for it?
Well, I think what happened, so I was studying rave, and what I realized when I was looking at like these like rave laws that were, or dancing laws that were happening in New York at the time, you know, when dancing was still illegal, which has now finally been reversed, mm-hmm. All of those laws were steeped in bigotry and racism. They were all like cabaret laws that were set up to discriminate against Black people in particular. And so there were people that were looking at it, and there mm-hmm. were people who were interested in that. But they were never really looking at it from the point of view of this is a racist narrative that has been turned into public policy that now we are still reeling from. It wasn't necessarily like couched in that language in the same way. Some people were looking at different aspects of it through racism, like Billie Holiday mm-hmm. would be an example of how like we knew that there was like this sort of racist angle and they were using the cabaret laws to silence her. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, they made that film that kind of talks about that. So that, but again, that was maybe not every single historian or whoever is going to be Black, because there are still pockets of people you know, like where we might have a subject who's Black, who's interesting to us, and there is no Black.
And the expert on that is a non-Black person.
Yeah, there's just no Black person for that. And, you know, so that's the other challenge of the conceit of what we're going to do. But I think that all of that is still kind of an interesting, you know, way to shape how we're going to do this podcast.
Yes. For me, I feel like I need to do this podcast because it is an important part of my spiritual, psychological growth to be looking at everything and everyone who came before, who has contributed to who I am and the world that I live in and the legacy that I probably should be working a little bit harder to carry forward, or that I maybe, hopefully, God willing, will become a part of one day. So I feel like it's, you know, it for me, it feels like a spiritual endeavor as much as it feels like a professional one to have a podcast. But I need to know these stories. And I know myself, if I don't make it work, then I won't do it. So I'm let me start to go and find these stories, not only of what we know about these women, but what we don't know that we should know about these women.
Exactly. I mean, my thing is, well, one of the things I didn't list on my list of things is an archivist. And yes. I'm not necessarily an archivist myself, but I'm more so like an archival advocate.
Yeah, you're the one who told me, like, you need to be archiving your work. And I was like, well, I got a butt ton of voice memos of sense. Is that something?
But that is something, you know, and, you know, I did two different presentations at conferences, one of them with the British Library. And that was the thing that kept coming up was like, people don't think that what they're doing is interesting or that other people want to know it. And I'm like, but as a rave researcher, for instance, when I was like looking at a very specific like thread of like, did rave music change between this period and this period because of the laws. I can't remember the name of the law right now. And one of the things that I was looking for was like flyers to see like, who were the people who were DJing in 1994? Were they the same people that were DJing in 1995? And one of the things that was really cool was a lot of people had recordings where they would go to a rave and they would record hours of the music.
Wow.
And you could kind of see, and I was like, see, this is what I'm saying. Like, that they didn't say, I'm saving this for prosperity because, you know, someone will eventually want to do research on this. I mean, they were just like, I want to listen to this music again. You know, and but that's the thing. But I think that's how archives start. And that's how, and also it's like, there are so many people who get erased from the conversation or erased from the space because they don't save their work. Then no one knows that they were there because the people who care about being there and being seen there, they make sure that you fucking know that they were there. And
aren't as good as the people who don't make sure that they, you know, they were there.
Exactly.
They're just people who are good at being like, hey, I'm doing this thing. I mean, it's basically like, and I'm doing that, and I'm doing that, unless someone else has recorded them. It's like, and I'm also doing this. And it's like, do we care?
And that's what I'm saying. And so it's like you, and so what happens is women, not just Black women, but women are like, I don't want to brag about what I do because I think that makes me look stupid or whatever.
So we don't celebrate bragging ourselves.
Yeah. And then, you know, like men fucking self-cite everything that they do.
Yeah.
Like there's lots of studies about how many times men self-cite their own, research.
Like IBID underneath in the footnotes, they've cited their own thing that they just said three
exactly.
pages earlier.
It's like fucking insane. And like women don't ever do that ever.
Yeah.
And so it's like there. So that was my impetus to be like, save your fucking shit. Save it all. Put it somewhere.
I've got a wall of shit.
Yeah.
Now, save thanks it. A lot, Nico.
Good. Be a fucking hoarder. I don't care. I mean, like, but like.
Trunks of shit.
Do it because that's the only way it's going to get preserved. Because no one gives a shit about preserving your shit. And like, you have to do it yourself. And then that's fine to do it yourself. But I mean, I think that is partially why I'm like, here's a document. Here is an archival activity that we can do to say, this person was here. This is what this person is doing. This is what we found out from the archive of this person or whatever. And I think that that is really cool. Like,
yeah, some
Aretha
stuff you
Franklin
just leave.
Didn't get to decide whether or not we saw the Amazing Grace documentary. And she was actively trying not to have that released. It was in active litigation at the time that she died. Mm. And literally a month after she was dead,
we do whatever we want.
Let's put it out.
Yeah.
And it's not because I think that they were trying to be shitty to her, but they were like, this is a cultural moment that we have captured.
Yeah.
That you were at in your finest hour, even though you don't see it that way.
It's beyond you at this point. And
we
your
deserve
decision.
To we deserve to share this with the world. And I mean so
that's
I
deep,
watched
though.
It.
Who's right in that situation?
No one
she
is right.
She made it
no
or she
one,
channeled it.
Yeah.
At
so
least
this is it's very disconcerting. I mean, like this what's the word?
Disconcerting?
Yes, disconcerting to me that like someone like Aretha Franklin didn't have a handle on her own legacy.
Yeah, at the very end of her life too. Like she didn't get the final say of no respected.
Right. But am I glad I saw that documentary? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Because I never would have been able to see her perform in the 70s in that way.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was a moment in time that like, so I mean, and am I complicit by watching it? Because I know that she didn't want it to be released. So how am I, what is my relationship to that?
Maybe,
but like, that's a different conversation. But like, you know, at the end of the day, it's like, I want whoever feels that something isn't interesting or important or whatever, I want them to feel emboldened to be like, but it is, it's who I am and it could be of use to someone else. And so save it and archive it and leave your stories to your family members, leave your, whatever it is, place it someplace that it can be found again. That's all that's kind of what I'm always asking.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think, and I guess this is very, very useful in what we're talking about in terms of perspectives, because, you know, I think as far as the strengths that you bring to this podcast and to what we're trying to do is that investigative kind of like, let's look for the story beneath the story and let's preserve the parts of this person that society might be more willing to ignore because there are, there are more convenient narratives for us. I mean, I don't know if we want to talk about the fact that we're actually speaking on Martin Luther King Day and talking about the duality of the narrative about him. You know, there is a narrative that is a safe social narrative, you know, in which we talk a lot about him and his work, but we don't actually read his work or focus on the speeches that were about unions and about supporting counterculture and about, how active and how aggressive nonviolence and, you know, it is actually. It's not a passive resistance. Nonviolence, you know, really sinks down to the core and it's really about like sticking, you know, the wrench inside of the gears of the machine, you know, by not responding to that. And there's so many parts that we don't talk about, you know, him in particular. And I feel like one of your strengths and what I'm really interested in doing with this podcast is to get the other story of a person, you know, like, I mean, we, you know, contain more than even two stories, but like, if you wanted to simplify it, there is, you know, there is the story of who we think we are and who we want to be. And there's the story of who everybody else knows and actually sees, right? There's at least two stories of us and there's probably so many more. And I think that one of the many things that you bring aside from just like, you know, a loving perspective and that high-pitched cackle that you make that just brings me joy and like the very deepest Zen sense of the word is that respect and that attention to duality and story, and also just being able to be like contrary in general and be like, you know, that thing everybody likes, I don't like that thing. It's like your favorite thing to do. And I was like, okay, let's strap
it's
in.
It's not my favorite thing to do. It's what happens.
It's what every time, though. Like, just you. Everybody's like, chocolate chip cookies are great. And you're like, fuck a chocolate chip cookie.
Exactly. When there's like, peanut
by
butter.
Instinct.
When there's peanut butter. Exactly. Gives a shit.
You see what I mean? So that is what I think. That's just what I love as part of working with you on this, is that you're going to be like, peanut butter forever.
Except for a snickerdoodle. Anyway.
Okay, yes.
But I think the reason that I wanted to do the podcast with you in particular is because, like, you're not afraid to be like, that is bullshit. And then you have to, like, call me on my, and which is great because so many people don't do that. So many people are just like,
they're like, I guess you're right.
Whatever,
or whatever
you said, I don't even, and they won't even, they don't necessarily even think I'm right about it, but they'll be like, whatever you say, but you're not,
Well, I'm not afraid to call bullshit on you because I love
but
you.
But no, but you're not abrasive about it because there's a way
sure,
to be like,
yeah, sure.
Like, I don't know that I agree with that. And like an argument, you know?
Sure.
And I mean, and that's kind of why, you know, one of the, well, I mean, yeah. I think that you're a diplomatic person in general anyway, but it's also like, so there's two things I would say that I think we're really exciting about doing the podcast with you
yeah.
is that we can have a discussion and we don't necessarily agree on stuff and we can kind of go back and forth, which
sure.
I think is the most exciting
yeah.
thing is being yeah. able to go back and forth with somebody.
Yeah.
And also to be like, oh, now that you say it that way, maybe I don't,
yeah,
maybe I'm not
so tied.
That's
what I love
tied.
About talking with you is that I'll be like, that's bullshit. And I'll argue this other side of the thing and then I'll go home and then I'll be like, oh, no, I see it.
Yeah, you know, and the same with me. And then also, you usually say yes to...
To too many things, Nika.
Too many things. But what I guess what I'm saying is like, you're always like, that seems cool. That seems interesting. How do I do more? Like, how do we do that? Like, what does it think? You know, because you have this like genuine curiosity that's not necessarily about knowing everything. You're not a know-it-all.
Yeah.
But you do want to know and you have that deep sense of wanting to know.
Yeah,
like, which that is a rarity. So many people don't give a shit. They don't want to know anything.
La, 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 la.
Well, and also, you know, like they've never thought about it. It's never sure. occurred to them that there is something to think about
in that thing.
It's like, oh, I just thought that was the thing.
Yeah.
And you're not like that. You're always like, that's never the thing. The thing that's one of the sides of the thing.
Yeah.
But there's all these other sides of the thing.
Yeah.
That I want to know
there's
more
always
about
more
or
underneath.
I want.
There's always more. There's yeah. always something like who is a figure, since the theme of our podcast is Black women, I would hope it would be a Black female figure, that you admire, somebody that gives you life.
Well, okay. So one of the people we actually talked about being maybe like the grandmother.
Yeah.
Or the godmother, the fairy. Like
yeah.
dead godmother is Josephine Baker because like yeah. she just had like all these lives.
Yeah. Yes.
Where she did all these things that like I didn't even know. Like she was like a spy and she had like 1,000 adopted kids.
Yeah.
And
she had a menagerie of animals and children. She like Angelina Jolie'd it. She Michael Jackson
yeah.
did it. And then she did who was a famous international spy? Josephine Baker. That's
yeah,
right.
Yeah. 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 It's like, what the fuck? You know? So like. And then I'm like, how did I not know this until like 6 months ago? But then I called you and you were like, girl, I was on a podcast talking
because
about her.
Because I had just done that podcast,
yeah,
which
and I was
excited
like,
to do this.
Yeah,
yes.
But that's what I'm saying. And it's like, so here's a figure. Here's a woman that I thought, one note lady. You know, like this is the story is she wears banana skirts.
Yeah, that's the story.
And
she did this banana dance. She was
yeah.
hot. She was a hot Black lady at a time where people were like, oh, my goodness, is that a thing that is a
yeah.
hot Black lady? Ooh. And then, of course, as many notable Black people did, she moved out of America so she could do some
mm-hmm.
stuff,
mm-hmm.
which
she
I can definitely can relate to. You know, so many people just like, I got to get out of here so I can like at least have the freedom to think thoughts that might actually happen.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. So it's like for me, like she was kind of like in the background of my mind, like someone I thought was really just fascinating. But I'm trying to think of someone who's currently living.
Well, I mean, obviously, one of the people we want to talk about is Grace Jones, who for me is somebody that I admire the more that I learn about her and her journey. Yeah. Like, I never realized, you know, like, I knew her, I guess the first time I would have seen her was probably in James Bond, you know, because of the time. Yes, because of the time in which I grew up, you know, and then I, you know, like, she was always definitely, it was definitely like, I mean, I didn't know about the model stuff until after I had seen that. I knew her as an actress, so I didn't know about her being a model until then after that. I didn't know about her being a singer until well after that, you know, and then learning more about, like, you know, she came from a very fundamentalist background, and like that was something that I could immediately relate to, as well as her reaction from that. And the fact that it was like her gay brother that made her kind of break, because, like, you know, it was just sort of like everyone's like, oh, you can't do this, you can't be gay. And he was in the choir, you know, like doing the whole thing when you're black and gay and can't be out.
Yep.
And it was like that. She was like, okay, I went to the clubs with him and supported him, and like we both brought each other to the place that we needed to be out of where we had come from. That made me go like, oh wow, life is really long. As you said with Josephine Baker, like we contain multitudes, you know, it gets used a lot, but for real, like the many lives that you live, you know. And she was like, talks about like, oh yes, you know, LSD was a very good experiment for me, you know, to help me break out of stuff. And I was just like, wow, I wish I'd known what a role model you were. And even still, when you see her now, like, she's still like, you know, she's stunning, but she's also like goofy and just funny and like, oh my god, like, thanks for inviting me out, let's take a selfie, because that's what we're doing now, you know, like just the fullness of her as a person, because it isn't necessarily just this sort of like intimidating.
Oh, she was indefinitely intimidating.
Of course. But, I mean, but because she had to be. I mean, I have another friend who is a model, black, dark skinned, had lived in Germany for quite some time, and she's super intimidating. And part of that is just like, because she has seen the most racist, messed up stuff, being a model, being a human coat hanger for people who want her to be this, and then say the most offhanded, disgusting stuff to her. I mean, just like Grace Jones, I can't remember the French dude at the modeling agency that was like, nobody wants to see this African, you're never going to work or whatever.
Right.
And like her entire life is a testament to what an idiot that guy was,
right,
just because he was French, white, and like was one of these people who knew it all.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And said it to her face as though he knew it all.
Right.
And she was like, oh, you don't know shit. And I'm about to prove it to you with my entire existence.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, I find that that happens so much. So much. Like Viola Davis talks about that too.
Of people being like, you're dark skinned and you're like, not going to get a lot of work.
Yeah. And like she just wasn't going to get anywhere. And like she had never, no one had ever seen anyone who like looked like her that was doing what she wanted to do. And that, like, that was just like, it just was an impossibility. And, you know, and it's like, Viola Davis? Have you ever seen this woman
like on screen, like, to say what? Words or do anything? Yeah.
Anything. And it's just, it's mind-boggling to me. But, you know, but the Grace Jones thing was not mind-boggling to me, because like I grew up, you know, with a mom who really was dismissive about her. We used to get into like,
oh, like fights about her.
And yeah.
Like nobody in my family ever talked about her. And in the 80s, she would have been considered like super masculine or super whatever, because she, because purely basically because of her skin tone, I think.
Well, and so my mom, that's what she used to say all the time, is she looked like a man. And I was like, she did
but
not.
But all of our moms come from that era. Like my mom, like, I can't tell you the number of times when I came home with my hair like this. And she's like, you have such pretty hair. You know, like you, like you, at some point she gave up telling me to straighten it. But I was just like, you're just from a different generation.
Right. Well, but I think this was the thing that was so confusing to me, because my mom is not like that.
Yeah.
You know, like.
And so never, you would have thought she would have been on board.
Yeah. And so I just didn't get it. And even now, I still think, you know, I think she is starting to see her through the lens of other people. Because like Janelle Monáe was just on Colbert talking about how much she loves Grace Jones. And I think my mom is slowly
going,
turning.
Oh, this woman carved out space for so many people.
Or just is accepting that, like, okay, she's not my thing.
But apparently she's the thing to a lot of people.
But I can see why people gravitate towards her, which I think was like a real, because like we literally would butt heads about it all the time. And I would be like, I don't understand what you don't, like, this woman is doing all the things
that
we
want.
Yeah, but
isn't that interesting, right? I always think that, like, now that I'm grown enough to understand when people have a real adverse reaction to somebody, like, press into that. what is that? Yeah, why is that? Because it's usually something about, it's usually she's doing some shit I wish I did.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. So I was like, what is the?
She has a confidence I wish I had. Yeah, she, like, you know.
And so I love Grace, you know, and I mean, and I love all, there were so many women that were coming out of, you know, coming into the zeitgeist at that time that were all like a little bit zany, a little bit, yeah. You know, like, you know, Eartha was doing yeah. weird ass shit, you know.
Oh man, Eartha. We haven't even talked about her yet. Like there's so many people
Diane Carroll.
We wanna, yeah.
And even like Diana, who mm-hmm. is like, you know, kind of straightforward in some ways, but also very, I think she's done a lot to sort of invert what people's expectations were.
Yeah.
You know, she wasn't like this like little, like she was mean, but she was also calculated in a way that.
Was she mean? I never knew that about Jenna
Well,
Ross.
She cut.
Or was she just like.
She like cut one of the Supremes out.
Yeah.
You know, and,
I mean,
and that woman died in
enterprising?
Poverty.
Oh, shit.
No, that woman died in poverty. But also, okay. I'm like, but she was also like 23. Like she was, you know, like she
when
was.
When she cut her out.
Like the, oh, like Diana Ross was like,
23 when she
well,
did
I don't
that.
Even know if she was that old. She might've been a teenager.
Major.
You know,
so she
you
know, did that because that's the way she thought the game needed
right,
to be played.
You know, and so I'm like, so do we really want to make pass judgment on what people do as teens and, you know, whatever. So, you know, it's like, there was just a lot of.
When their brains aren't even done forming yet.
And also you just don't know what you're doing. You just don't know what you're doing.
You are following in the footsteps of other people right. until you know enough to break away from that and go, like, they don't know what they're doing
right.
either.
And I'm like, would today's Diana Ross have done that? Probably not.
Yeah, probably
you
not.
Know, and,
but I mean, anybody who is lived that many years, I mean, usually people get a lot happier as they get older. They get a lot more like, oh, I've been different people. I've seen the repercussions of different kinds of actions. So I, you know, like, and when you're 20, you're just slashing your way, like carving out your space in the world with any tools that you have.
And I mean, I'm not going to speak for Diana Ross or any other person, but I know I was a fucking idiot until like maybe a month ago.
Goodbye, 2022. We are ready to step into our prime.
Well, I mean, yeah.
I mean, along with some of the cultural figures, I think that I'm really excited to look into some of the science figures, like somebody that, you know, I was really inspired by this past year, which I had posted about when I was doing my sort of campaign on Instagram for British Black History Month. So they get October and we get February. So I'm going to try to cover, but I mean, but they got a 31-day month, even though they're like, Black History, what? What? It's just like some sepia-toned retrospectives of people who worked at the BBC. Mm-hmm. But God bless them, you know, they're doing whatever. But like, I'm really excited by, like, I discovered, didn't discover, but I learned about Dawn Wright, who is known as Deep Sea Dawn.
Who is that?
She is the woman, she's the first woman, she's the first Black person of any gender to go to Challenger Deep, which is the bottom of Mariana Trench. So it's a mile lower than Everest is tall.
Whoa.
So like, you know, in the Pacific, it's like the lowest point on Earth. And she went in a submersible with a venture capitalist who is a rich white guy, because that's how you get to go places a lot of times. Mm-hmm. But she's the first person to get down there because she works for I think it's called Esri or whatever, but it's like she's a geographer, so she's basically trying to map the oceans. So like, so you'll see the map of whatever, but eventually one day you'll see the map of everything underneath that is the whole world, which is like as close to space as people who aren't Jeff Bezos
wow,
are going to get.
That's
like,
amazing.
So she's been down to, you know, where it's bioluminescent and where, you know, it's just like there are all of these like natural gases coming through, like places that usually only James Cameron goes to and then makes apparently quite traumatizing films. I don't know. I haven't seen any Avatar, but my friends who just went were like, it was in IMAX and 3D and traumatizing as fuck.
Oh, no.
So intense, so violent.
Oh, no.
Probably not the same thing that she would say. But like, you know, there are, you know, the Black women who are, you know, whether it's the women behind Hidden Figures or, you know, more, is it Valerie Thomas who came up with the sort of the photography that allowed the Hubble telescope to actually take pictures. You know, those women who I think, you know, we don't like, I'm not a person who's very STEM oriented, except for the fact that I find science quite beautiful as an artist. And so I'm really curious about the women who are have dedicated their lives in a lot of obscurity to like making this thing that changes everybody's lives. And there are so many Black women who have been so important in that kind of thing that I just am like, oh, why don't we know about them at all? Like there are some people where it's like, you don't know the whole story. And there are other people where it's like, you don't know any story. Like you don't know this person's name. Mm-hmm. You don't know what they look like. You couldn't, you know, pick them off of a milk carton or, you know, they're not going to be up on your kindergarten wall for Black History Month. You don't know them. And you really should, because they've changed the way the world works. And the work that they did is the work that typically white men built their work on and got a lot of credit for. So like, you know, they are the very beginning of that pedestal that lifted so many people up, you know? And I mean, that's true in culture as well, but I just feel like there's a lot of Black female scientists that I'm really excited to discover and like inventors and stuff like that.
I remember Ayaan Hirsi Ali. I read her first autobiography and she said like, there have been no African inventions in the modern era. And I was like, that is not true.
Yeah.
And I think,
I mean, did she qualify that?
No, because she doesn't qualify anything with anything because she's that person. And she said that and I thought, well, first of all, that's not true. But also it's like there are so many African people who had to leave the place to go to another place in order to get what they needed because, you know, the continent has been ravaged.
Yeah, exactly. Because so people all the came resources and destroyed their depleted. Place and they had to go somewhere where there was a resource.
Right.
Yeah. So it's
And so anyway, I started like kind of rabbit holing. This was years ago that I read this and I started rabbit holing and finding all of these examples to prove her wrong. And I've been doing that for like a decade now.
Do you just DM them to her? Just like, and another one.
It's just my personal grievance with this woman that she has no idea about. Maybe she'll know now because I'm saying it in public. But like, you know, just like, just the idea of that just was so absurd. I was like, the entire continent of Africa? You think they've contributed nothing?
That they haven't invented anything?
Right.
Or was she saying that like they've all left Africa to go do things other places?
No, I think what she was saying was like, you know, fundamentalists have ravaged, like, you know, the Middle East and North Africa. And
she does have a point.
Right. And, you know, and that they've basically have decimated any kind of intellectual prowess that
so she was trying to kind of be like, here's a testament to the damage that's really been done, not only to the land, but to the people through that. Okay.
And I was like, what about music? What about culture? What about like, what do you mean by
inventions? Yeah. What? Yeah, exactly.
I mean, they haven't built rockets. That's true.
Yeah.
You know,
but I mean, I don't know. We're mostly only building rockets so we can bomb people from space.
Right. But I was like, but there is the, you know, the, what is the name of this? African Science Project, which is a band. So I was like, you know.
Nice.
We doing something. But anyway.
Yes.
I mean, I'm just trying to think like, oh, you know, because it's MLK holiday, like someone who I want to meet maybe in person. I mean, not in person, but for the podcast.
Yeah, I like to actually speak
to.
So
I think I've already talked to you about my idea for this woman, Jacqueline Smith.
Tell me about Jacqueline
So she is, she has been like this one woman protest in front of the the National Civil Rights Museum in Memphis. Uh-huh. She's been out there this year. I don't know the exact date. I think in February she'll have been protesting for 35 years in front of this, in front of the Lorraine Motel where Dr. King was murdered, was assassinated.
Yeah.
Because she was the last living resident of the motel and got evicted.
Yeah.
And became.
So she had an axe to grind and a cause to start at the same time, which is the perfect dovetail to commit your life to something.
And was just like, this is not what Dr. King would have wanted, which I think is absolutely true.
Because it's glorifying his murderer from the way you've described it. I've not been there, but now you're going to get me to go to Memphis for the first time in my life so we can go talk to this woman.
Talk to this lady.
Yes.
And I mean, like, I mean, I'm saying we're doing this. I hope we do this. Yeah, I'm putting it out there. Is that what you're supposed to do? I think we should do it.
I hope that she wants to talk to us about it.
Is that what the secret is about?
Yes. Yeah. I think so. I haven't read it.
I've only heard about it from 10,000 people.
I just do the,
you know, someone told me this about me once. She was like,
You're just doing the secret.
Yeah, she's like, you're like the secret. You just like say you're going to do something and then you do it. It's just like the secret. And I was like, or it's that I follow up with the things that I say I'm going to do.
You do, and that's not really a secret.
That's just
that's
what,
just your secret.
That's just
you're what, like, hey, guys, I follow
That's what
through.
Productive people do. But anyway, in my dream, in my fantasy podcast, like we go to Memphis and we talk to this lady.
Yeah.
And then I make a documentary about her.
Oh, yes, obviously.
And then I win the Academy Award.
For podcasts and documentaries at the same time, which apparently is a thing you can do.
Oh my God. And then I'll be like, what's the EGOT?
They should add one for P.
And then I only have to do all the other ones.
You'll only have to get a Grammy, an Emmy, and a Tony.
And it'll be a PGOT.
Yeah. I can't. But I'm never going to stop saying PGOT now because it makes me laugh.
Who do you want to talk to besides me?
I mean, obviously. I just feel like I'm really excited because we've been talking about meeting up with Michelle Coltrane, and the more that I learn about, you know, her mother and the ashram and everything, the more excited I am to talk to her as like somebody who saw very intimately, because she was the first of the kids, right? She was from a previous marriage, I think.
I don't know her history that well.
I thought that she was the first of the four kids. Yeah. And so, you know, that, like, the firstborn, you know, knows the parents in a way that, like, the other ones don't. Like, they got, you know, like, they got the full brunt of who those people are.
I'm the baby in my family.
We'll have to ask Astrid what her experience was.
I know the least about the information. Also
the baby, maybe depending on how you are as a baby, sticks around the longest. Like my brother is the baby, but he stuck closer while the rest of us went away. So, you know, different perspectives, but I think every kid gets a different parent. So I'm excited to see what her experience was of, you know, them and of Alice's, you know, music, and also just her transition into more of a spiritual path, and how that, you know, the times in which it bled, you know, the bleed in between, and also, yeah, just generally in that time. I don't know. I'm always interested when somebody kind of drops the rocket boosters of their first life and then like goes into the next one, and what that trajectory looks like, because it's often quite different.
Well, and this is the thing. I mean, like So we're talking about Black women are the Illuminati. This was your idea. We have all the secrets.
We're the ones gluing it together.
Right.
But we're the ones in the background of a dollar bill actually being like, I'm here doing the work.
Right. But my interpretation of that has always been luminary, that we wanted to illuminate, is like all these different ways in which we are contributing, whether we get credit for it or not. Matters less in some ways, but it's like, I'm just so excited to just have the conversations about these people.
Shall we tell these people where to follow us?
Yeah. And we have we have a podcast. We're doing that right now.
Okay, look, to keep up with us, be sure to follow us on Twitter, on Instagram, and TikTok. Are we going to do TikTok? Why do we have to do it? Can I not just... I don't get grandfathered out of TikTok.
Wait a minute. I didn't know we were on Twitter. Are we on Twitter?
Well, we will be by the time anybody hears this.
I was ahead of that shit before everybody. I mean, anti-Twitter before everybody.
If you opt out of any social media, you are ahead of the curve. It's just a matter of time. All right. So wait, what's our Instagram handle?
Black Women Are the Illuminati.
Thank you very much. And maybe TikTok. If we start TikToking it, probably Black Women Are the Illuminati.
Yeah, I don't know anything about TikTok.
No, I mean, neither do I, except for all the people who are like, you need to be on TikTok. And I'm like, okay. But can any of you guys just professionally show up, record me doing whatever, decide what's funny, edit it, and then put it up there? Thanks.
Wait a minute. And then we're going to be on a podcast network, right?
Yes, we will be. I don't know what to say about that. I just have the script in front of me. Yes.
In due course.
In due course. But for more information, please go to blackwomenarettheilluminati.com. You know how to spell it if you don't Google it, okay? Cool. You can find more episodes wherever you listen to all of your favorite podcasts, of which we hope to be the top.
But anyway, yeah. Thanks, man.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for doing this with me.
Oh, my gosh. I thank you for all of the wonderful things that are about to happen. We don't even know yet.
We don't even know yet.
Yeah.
Except PGOT 2024. We do know that.
Yep. All right. We can do this. I'm on it.
Yeah. So hopefully we'll see you guys again soon. And we'll talk to other people.
Yes.
And maybe not so much about ourselves.
And yeah.
So I'm excited.
Yeah. Be back with us. We'll see you soon.
Okay. Bye. Is this the end?
I think so.
Bye then.
Bye.
All right, we are going to leave it there for now, my friends. Thank you so much for giving us a listen. Black Women Are the Illuminati is hosted by Nico Rosario and Desiree Birch and produced by Desiree Birch, Hill Hart, Linz Creates, Nico Rosario, and Jamara Wakefield. Special thanks to JP Buck for helping to nurture us into a running start with this episode, as well as our lovely sound engineer, Will Beckton at Jet Road Studios, for letting us explode into your fantastic local studio in Los Angeles. If you'd like to hear more from us, please follow us on Instagram at Black Women Are the Illuminati and sign up for our mailing list at blackwomenarettheilluminati.com or BWATIpodcast.com if you'd prefer not to know how to spell Illuminati. You can also subscribe to Black Women Are the Illuminati wherever you get your podcasts.